Hey everyone, I'm Chris Hall and you're listening to the Downtime Podcast. If you're looking for the most in-depth insight into the world of downhill and enduro mountain biking, then this is the podcast for you. First up, thanks to this month's supporting partner, PNW Components. PNW Components are a small Seattle-based company that sets out to make awesome quality products at sensible prices, and I'd say that they're delivering on that promise. I've got their Bachelor dropper post and Loam Lever remote and I've been really impressed. The post was super easy to fit and so far hasn't missed a beat. And the Loam Lever remote, well, that needs to be used to be believed. It's a stunning precision machine component with a great little silicon thumb pad that makes using your dropper super easy. You can see their full range over at pnwcomponents.com. That's the letters P-N-W, then the word components.com. They're kindly offering Downtime listeners 10% off their entire range until the end of June. All you need to do is use the code Downtime over at the checkout. You can find that link and the show notes for every episode of the podcast by just heading to downtimepodcast.com. While you're there, don't forget to subscribe, as not all of our episodes are available on other websites. It's totally free and it means you'll get each episode as soon as it drops. There's a subscribe page on the website to help you do that. If you want to support what I'm doing and show that you're part of an ever-growing crew of riders who are listening to the podcast, learning from our guests and getting faster on your bike, then head to downtimepodcast.com/shop, where you'll find t-shirts, hoodies, sweatshirts and mugs. All proceeds go towards growing and improving the podcast. Other ways you can help are to leave us a review on iTunes or wherever you listen, or the biggest one, tell your friends and spread the word. That's how this thing's got to where it is, and it's how it's going to continue to grow. I just want to say a big thank you to everyone that's done that and, you know, spreading the word, chatting with your friends about this podcast, sharing it on social media. It means a huge amount. So I've just got back from a long drive back from Fort William. It was an awesome weekend. I want to say a big thank you to everyone that came over to say hello. It was really great to hear from you and to hear how much you're enjoying the podcast and how much you're getting out of it. Also, huge thanks to all the riders, the teams and the brands for making me feel so welcome in the pits. It means a lot that I've got your support. The final thanks has got to go to Nico and Elliot. These guys are at the World Cup doing their jobs and they're very busy people, but they've always been willing to make the time for me and to get involved with this post-race show concept. It was great to finally sit down together and record this in person. So we're going to find out what Elliot and Nico thought about one of the most exciting Fort William races for some time. It was a rough weekend with insane amounts of wind and rain and a lot of riders suffering from huge crashes. So sit back and have a listen to find out more about what went on and off the racetrack. All right, Nico Mullally, Elliot Jackson, we're finally in the same room. This is good stuff.
Live podcast.
Live.
In front of a huge audience.
Yeah, man. The audience of three. Nico, tell us where we are because this is a pretty nice place.
We are at our accommodations here looking directly at Ben Nevis and the Fort William race venue. So, we're just over the hill from Fort Bill.
Yeah, so you can wake up in the morning and see what you got to do for the day.
Yeah. Take a look straight at the mountain there.
So sweet.
Just thinking good about it all the time.
Nice. Nice. What a race, to be fair. Like, that's probably the most exciting Fort William for a few years, certainly. Yeah. From my perspective, like, what was your kind of takeaway memory from the weekend, Nico? Is there something that stand out?
Omri Pirion's time was unbelievable.
Yeah, man,
that
sure.
Guy was flying. The last couple of guys were just taking seconds out of each other, big chunks, and then I really thought Troy had it, and Omri came down and put 3 seconds into him. Like, unbelievable.
Impressive stuff, so, eh?
That was cool to see. Like, those guys are on another level.
Sweet.
It was awesome.
What about you, Elliot?
Yeah, I would have to agree. Like, it was actually funny because this race is, you think of it as being almost overhyped, but then stuff like that happens and you're just like, good Lord. Like, literally don't think it's possible. So that was really, really good.
Pretty standout, yeah. But it's been a pretty challenging week, I think, for most people. Like, track walk on Thursday was not the most pleasant conditions, but I think most people went up the hill and got stuck in.
Yeah, I think it started raining exactly at noon on Thursday, which was an hour before track walk. So yeah, it was gnarly. Qualifying was pretty nice in the afternoon yesterday, but the rest of the weekend was cold and raining, which is a lovely combo here at Fort William. And the wind at the top is gnarly too. Like, it's all out in the open, as you can see. And when the wind blows through, it almost blows you offline in places, and the tape's blown into the track, and you got to be careful with trying to jump things because you get blown over, and it adds a whole nother challenge to it.
Yeah.
And we had a lot of those different elements this weekend.
Yeah, and they've put a windsock up on the top of the track now, so at least you can see. Do you look at that? Do you pay? Are you able to kind of?
I looked at it every time.
Really?
Because you come in, it's right before those two long bridges that are actually kind of narrow. Like, they're kind of crazy they have that stuff on a World Cup track. But to be fair, what they're working with there, it's, if you saw the ground here in Nevis Range, it's almost like a swamp. Mm-hmm. So the entire track is manufactured, made of gravel. Or in those places, they have those long bridges to get over the swamp. And they have that windsock there so you can tell where the wind's going when you get onto it. Because if you got blown off the line on that thing, that'd be your day done.
Yeah.
You'd be stuck in the bog.
For sure. Elliot, did you go up on track walk?
Yeah, I did. I walked it during practice. And like Nico was saying, I fell literally like 3 or 4 times. It's like more treacherous walking down the track than riding it. But it is crazy. Like, you would struggle to actually ride down next to the track on a bike, like probably just sink into the ground. But I think it's funny. I felt like the theme for me this year was that the track has been the same, but it's still so different. Like, looking at that first little rock garden, there's that one big hole that came out and it like caught so many people out, you know? And it was funny because I talked to Loic and I was like, what are you looking at? Like, this has been the exact same rocks are here that's been here the last year and the year before and the year before and the year before. But just, you know, 2 inches, a hole will develop and it just changes the whole section. So it's pretty interesting.
Yeah. What did you think to the small changes that they had made lower down? So there was a new wood section that kind of came away from the wood section they put in the last year, and it was like just bare track ready to get rutted up and rained on.
Yeah.
What do you think that added?
I don't know, like maybe the one, the really gnarly wood section was a little bit too much. Even still though, like, I would have almost rather ridden that than like the rocks bit that they put in there. So I don't know. I liked it. Like, especially as a fan, like, that was one of the more exciting parts. And I think as a rider, it does kind of suck because kind of rolling the dice a bit, like, you have your whole run, it's like really precise. And then, you know, you get a little bit offline or whatever. And, that can end your run. So it does suck in that way, but it did make it a little bit more interesting.
Yeah, adds a bit of line choice and a little bit of thinking,
yeah.
I guess.
Yeah, definitely. For sure. Like, that was definitely the place where you saw the most lines. Like, some people were going outside trying to jump a hole. Some people were going inside. You saw some people go middle and, like, go over a bump, middle go below the bump. And, like, every single time somebody would come through, like, that's what got the cheers, was like, oh, my God, like, that was gnarly.
Nice, nice. So, Nico, you turn up at the pits for first day of practice, it was throwing it down with rain all day. Like, how do you prepare your setup? Like, how do you approach kind of clothing, helmet, visibility, all that kind of stuff?
Yeah, I think I'm maybe a little bit more prepared for it than other riders because I ride at home in the rain. Like, this is a typical winter day at Windrock in those conditions. So being prepared with like little things, like I had shoe covers that kept my feet dry, having spare pairs of gloves, having a good base layer, so I had like tights on underneath my pants and a good base layer shirt, and having spares of those that you can change if you get soaked, because you're out from 12 to 5, and if you get really cold, it just kind of, you can't practice well and you use a lot of energy.
Yeah.
So did you do the rubber gloves over the—
I never do the rubber gloves. I just run different sets of dry gloves.
Yeah.
I always have a set in my pocket and the pair I'm wearing. Way. So if they get like super wet or muddy or something, I can throw them out. But yeah, just being prepared with stuff like that, kind of thinking ahead and making sure you have what you need. And then bike setup, really not too different in the wet or dry at Fort William, because aside from that wood section that's maybe 20 seconds of the 4.5 minute track. The rest of it almost rides faster in the rain because it's got more grip. The surface is like a kind of like concrete dust or gravel that they built the track out of. So when it's wet, it actually has more grip than when it's dry and loose. So as far as like tire pressures and suspension or setup that way goes, when it's muddy like that on this track, I wouldn't change anything on the bike.
Yeah, so you're running a, basically a dry setup as far as the bike itself is concerned.
Yep. And really no changes to the bike.
Yeah.
Just being prepared to be out in the elements. Like, I guess if I was going out hiking or camping.
That's not how I want to think about it. My race.
It's kind of enduro, huh?
How are you dealing with visibility? A lot of riders were complaining. There was like Friday, it was just the track was great, but it was super hard to see anything.
Yeah. So for me, if it's actually raining, I use roll-offs because they're easier to pull. You have a lot more pulls and there's only one film ever in front of your goggle lens at a time. But the downside to a roll-off is the range of vision is narrower. And it's kind of cumbersome on the sides of your goggles. So if it's not actually raining, I'd run a tear-offs, which I ran in my race run. And that gives you your entire goggle lens of vision. They're a little bit harder to pull, I guess. The roll-off string, you just grab it and rip it and it works. But a tear-off, you got a few on there, you don't rip the whole pack off. If it's raining, you could get water between the back of the tear off and the goggle easier than on a roll off.
Okay.
So they don't quite work as well in the rain. So for that long practice day, I had roll offs and they work pretty good. So yeah. I think that's what a lot of the riders did as well.
Okay. Did you put a peak extender on? I saw quite a few people running those.
Yeah. That just helps you. If you tape a clear lens onto the end of your peak, you can kind of tilt your head down and use the end of your peak to stop raindrops flying onto your goggles or anything that might kick up off your front wheel from you running into it then with
the biggest thing extender. On a mountain bike is like self roofs, huh?
Yeah, for sure. And fenders are getting good. Like we always run Marsh Guard stuff and that stuff works awesome. But if you kick up water or mud off of your front wheel and then run into it, then you're roosting yourself.
yeah for sure. Elliot, you were up on the hill chatting to riders throughout practice. What were the kind of thoughts? How are people dealing with it?
I think it's, I don't know, I've it's been so interesting being not only on the sidelines but also kind of out of the mindset. Like when you come to a race as a rider, you're so focused on yourself and what you need to do and kind of everything that goes into creating your program. So from the outside in, like just seeing how everyone's personality goes into it, because I feel like that's the most important thing. And so going back to your question, like a lot of riders like maybe didn't do as many runs, especially the women. And so you would say, well, you should probably do your, like, have your same process, whether it's like rainy or dry or whatever. And like, you saw riders like Brooke was like, oh, do you change or whatever? He's like, no, like, what do you mean? Like, I'll be out here if it's snowing, if it's like, whatever. And so like, for him, like, that's how, like, for him, it doesn't matter. And like, he needs to do that same thing. And for somebody like, I think Connor was like, yeah, like, I don't know, like not super into it, so I'm just going to do one or whatever, you know? And so it's just been interesting saying like, would Connor do better if he did more runs, or like, would Brooke do worse if he did less? And it's just, you know, actually seeing how people handle the different situations, like cope with the stress and stuff like that has been so interesting. It just makes me think that mountain biking is even like more mental than I had originally thought.
Interesting.
Because and more like just if you can totally know your personality, you know, which is difficult because it's like if you're not doing well or you do well or whatever else, like that can throw it off. Like
yeah.
If I do bad, then it's like, oh, well, I should have just done more runs or whatever. It's like, actually, no, like you were fine there. Just it was a bad weekend. You know? So
could you get a feel for how you thought people were going to perform based on how they were with you when you chatted to them over the weekend? Or is it hard to pick?
It's funny you say that, because I was having this conversation, and there's this trend from Maribor to here, like talking to Mark Wallace in Maribor. He was like, oh, like I love the conditions. It was just like at home. Like I didn't really think anything about it. Like all good, you know, and it just like poured rain and like roots, super slippery. And then other riders were like, man, I was just trying to get down super like safe and smooth or whatever. Same here. I think Finn did well in time training. And he was like, yeah, it's just like at home. Like I, you know, I was loving it or whatever. And then a lot of people didn't even ride because it was too whatever.
Yeah.
So, you know, it's kind of like what comes first. Like if I do well, am I happy because I did well? I'm like, yeah, I love the conditions or whatever. Or like, would you have been happy with the conditions like if you didn't do well? But I don't know. I think it would be interesting, but I think you can almost kind of maybe pick out a few of the riders who are in good spirits. Like yeah. Having talked to a lot of them in the beginning, it's like, oh, like he or she's, you know, happy right now, you know, they're yeah. not worried about the weather and they're not thinking about like if it's going to rain or if it's not going to rain or whatever. They're just like in the moment.
Yeah.
And I think those people are usually the people who do well.
They're on it. Yeah. Yeah. So Saturday rolls around and the weather was much better. We had a bit of a shower first thing in the morning, but the track had a fair hammering in the rain on Friday. B group practice has been up and done some more damage. Was there much difference that you noticed when you got out on track on Saturday for kind of practice and qualifying runs, or was it holding up pretty good?
No, this track holds up awesome to the water. Like I said, any other track that got that amount of rain and tires on it the day before would be destroyed. And this thing like was pretty much perfect on Saturday. They didn't do anything to it. It just like sat without rain for a few hours.
Yeah.
And it was perfect. Like the grip was awesome. Everything was good. So yeah, they've designed a track obviously for the Scottish weather.
Yeah, yeah, they have. Apparently at the British round it was really beaten up, and then in the couple of weeks since then they've been heli lifting bags of gravel up onto the hill and packing it into all the braking bumps. So everyone that was at the BDS said it was running so much faster here, and like yeah, the speeds on the track were a lot higher, I think.
Yeah, yeah, you could tell where they did some work to the track. I don't envy those guys. They can't just dig up dirt on the side of the trail and fix it. They got a heli hardcore in and use that to build the course. So, yeah, I think for the BDS too, it's like one of the opening weekends for them. So it had like snow melt and everything all winter, and then they just run a race on it. So that's pretty gnarly.
Yeah, and it seems like it's been a fairly high consequence track. More so than normal Fort William, it feels anyway, over this weekend. Like a lot of big names have been down pretty hard. Most of them have got back up again and been able to compete. But do you feel that as a rider when you start seeing, you know, big names and really, really fast riders having trouble on this track? Do you block that out? Does it make you think about the consequence and the risk, or does it not impact you?
It doesn't bother me at all. I kind of know what I'm in for at Fort William. It's a really fast track, which is why a lot of that stuff happens. And I think this weekend with the weather, like, it doesn't slow down like I was saying earlier, but there's a few soft spots where you'll get holes that come out, and it's those holes that can catch people out. So yeah, you just have to be just aware of what you're doing, aware of how the track's developing. Because like there's just places where there's water coming up out of the middle of the ground in the center of the track, and then after 100 riders run over it 5 times each, it's gonna get a pretty nasty hole.
Yeah.
And if you're jumping into that or breaking in it or dropping off into it, that seems to be like where riders are having trouble.
Yeah.
But yeah, no, it doesn't bother me. I just be aware of what I'm doing.
I think it's interesting too here that it's like so long, and like Nico was saying, like there can be smooth sections and then like one hole could be huge. Cause I think you're kind of relatively relaxed, like going down the track in a lot of places because there's not much to it. Like you could just be riding down a straight and just be loose over a couple of bumps. And then if you hit one of the, like, if there's water in a hole and it's actually like a foot deep or whatever, like you'll hit it and you're totally not ready for it. Whereas like at Valdosole is something like that, you just, you're totally, you know that there's like 2 foot deep holes all the way down. So you're like ready for it. But
yeah, I think it's just because the track's like made out of gravel, like we were saying. And there's always like springs, like I've learned by track building. There's like water that comes up out of the ground where you don't want it to, even if you plan drainage to keep the water off. And places where that gravel might be thinner than others, that a hole develops. And like Elliot was saying, you don't expect it because the surface is fairly consistent at other places. And yeah. Like on a track that's not built out of dirt that was brought in, it would be the same everywhere because that's what the natural landscape is. But here, it's, you get a couple of spots where it's not what they built, and it's totally different than that. And so, yeah, it kind of catches you out because it's the one spot, one big hole that isn't like the rest.
yeah. And the specialized gravity boys seem to have a particularly hard time on the Saturday. They look like they've been in a bar brawl, the two of them. Like, did you see Loic's crash?
I didn't see the video of the crash.
Have you seen it, Elliot?
I didn't.
Man, yeah. So you know the...
Oh, I heard about where it
hit,
was.
Yeah, like, came in inside, back, kind of went, and then he started getting off kind of on the takeoff, really, but massive overshoot to the ground. And
yeah.
Fair play.
That part, I actually crashed there 1 year. I don't know how I got away with it, but I don't even remember what happened. I think I was going inside and swapped out up the lip, but I was like kind of slowed down, but I came off the side of the jump to the left and like literally ejected out into the bushes and was just like, I don't know how I'm alive. Like that is way too fast to be crashing on. But it's crazy. Like same, you don't expect it because you could ride that section 1,000 times and be fine. Like you have, you know?
Yeah.
And something like that can just happen randomly
at the end of the Saturday as well, knowing you've got a race day coming up.
Yeah.
So how do you deal with that as a racer? Like, is it, do you just have to kind of get your physio and do what you can to get your body back together? And
yeah, I mean, I've been in that position quite a few times. Last year, even I remember two of the races I was limping to the start line. And yeah, you're just managing it. Like, if you can get some help from the physio with a massage, you know, taking ibuprofen to reduce swelling, a lot of times that helps a lot. But for me, when I take that, it makes me feel lightheaded as well. So it's a give and take. Like sometimes if you've got a really bad ankle or knee or bruise somewhere, that stuff will make that kind of pain go away, but then make you feel a little bit weird. So every rider is probably different with what works for them. But just trying to, like, as quickly as you can get recovered and get your body ready to go for the next day. But when adrenaline kicks in and once you get to the top and warm up and get in the start gate, it's crazy how much of that stuff just goes away.
Yeah, it was interesting talking to Loic this morning about it, and I kind of like asked him, you know, like, how are you, what's the goal now, like does something change or whatever. And like Nico was saying, you can feel it in the body before you get into the starting gate. And I think that definitely, like, you know, going back to kind of like the mood or whatever, and he was saying, like, yeah, like maybe your expectations are a little bit different, and, you know, I'm kind of doing a little bit of damage control, maybe, like, this is, you know, if I'm thinking about the championship, like, this is one of my bad days, and if I can minimize that, then like it could be good. But I think the other side of it is, when something like that does happen, there's no pressure because it's like, oh, I'm hurt, you know? So it's just like no expectations, and you can actually almost sometimes ride better or at least up to what you normally would, even though you're not 100%.
Yeah. Yeah. Cause the expectations on Loic going into this weekend are high, right?
Yeah.
Super good start to the season. So weight on his shoulders, I'm sure.
Yeah.
Yeah. So qualifying then was a pretty impressive show for Mr. Vergier. Like a good chunk of seconds ahead of everyone. Was there much talk about that last night? How are people feeling?
I think a lot of the riders were impressed by the gap that he and Amari both put into the rest of the field. Yeah, those guys were on it. And I think a lot of the other riders had trouble. Like, it seemed like watching that quali, like when you got to the top 20, there was a lot of guys that had an issue, especially the faster guys. And it kind of seemed like there should have been more guys slotting in around where they were, but there was such a big gap back from them. And it was kind of like waiting to see today how riders would be able to get closer to them and bridge that, and where those guys that had trouble, like Loic or other people that were expected to do well that had an issue, where they would slot in and how they would have slotted in. But it just seemed like only those two guys got good, put in a really good run.
Yeah.
And then back from there, it was kind of not, the guys weren't able to do their best.
Yeah. And then Loris at the bottom of that run, even saying that he wasn't that happy with it, he'd made some mistakes.
Yeah. So. I mean, obviously we saw today what could have, what it could have been.
Yeah. Yeah, for sure. Cool. So, and Rachel yesterday kind of struggled a little bit in qualies. Like, she didn't look comfortable on the bike for some reason. Like, her body kind of looked, the position looked a bit odd. It didn't look like the normal Rachel.
Yeah. I was thinking that too, because, I was wondering if something happened because she like lost so much time. I would say like Rachel, if there's anywhere where Rachel is the closest to the guys, it's like split one at Fort William. but yeah, she like crushed it up there, and then it was like, I think she lost, was back like 7 seconds at second split. So I don't think anything happened. I remember somebody saying that they had talked to her and just like was a bit tired or whatever, but I don't know. It seems like kind of typical Rachel, where it's like qualifying's a bit like, I don't know, and then you go to finals and kind of it's all good.
Yeah, yeah.
But it was actually kind of, to talk about the whole weekend for Tracy, I was like really impressed with like the handle that she had on the track, because I talked to her after practice. I think it was after qualifying. She won qualifying. And every day, because I've always thought that Fort William is, a lot of people think it's like really flat out, but to me it's like more of a precision track where you really, like, it's all about your braking. Like, you have to be like on and off, like really executing your braking points, like trying to get off the brakes as fast as you can. Like, I mean, even though all of downhill is average speed, like here, it's kind of forefront in your mind where it's just like, okay, like carry speed out of here. Cause like I have a long straight that I can't really pedal on. There's not really much to pump. So it's just like, how can I keep that flow the whole time? And she was kind of talking about that. Like, she was like, yeah, like I really think it's like just trying to get lines and like execute and like trying to get my breaking points and be precise. And you could see that from like the qualifying videos and in finals. Like, she had a plan for the whole weekend, and it like really worked out. And I was impressed by like her whole kind of mindset from it. It was a bit of a switch from maybe how, I don't know about her normally, if you could say that, but just like, she just felt really confident. I feel like a lot of times she's like, yeah, I don't know why I'm stopped here. I'm just here. Fair enough.
Yeah, that was an amazing performance from her. She really did kind of push Rachel pretty hard today.
Yeah.
Considering we've got, you know, unfortunately no Tani after her crash on Friday, and no Miriam still recovering. It was good to see those two kind of battling it out. Definitely made Rachel work for the win.
Yeah, I think Tracy definitely saw the opportunity and maybe even stepped her game up a little bit. She felt like she could challenge for the win. And I mean, looking at the splits here, she very well did. So yeah, it was cool to see.
Yeah, good stuff. And it gets Rachel, I guess, a bit of momentum after a start that I'm sure she wasn't overly happy with the season, because if it's not a win, then it's not good enough. I think that's kind of where she's at. And then, yeah, some good performances from some of the other girls. Nina Hoffman with a third place. She's going to be pretty stoked with that.
Yeah, she was really, really, really stoked.
Awesome. And Marine Cabaret looked like she could do some damage, and fourth place is a solid result, but I'm guessing she probably getting to the point where she wants more than that.
Yeah. Yeah. I think she was saying that her run wasn't the best run, but, does seem like she's kind of a, when she gets into the groove, like you watch her race and you see her like whipping it out over the jumps and like a little bit more steezy than all the rest of the girls. So I think it's like for her, like if she can get into a flow, then it's just helps her weekend a lot, I think.
Yeah. And I guess the absence of two of the top riders, in the same way that when Rachel was out a few seasons back, it kind of sometimes it seems to change the mindsets of some of the other girls because they see the opportunity to get the podium positions, and it almost feels like sometimes they raise their game, I think. Mm. So do you think we'll see an exciting rest of the season for the women's racing, maybe? Like push a few girls pushing to get those spots?
I don't think so. I mean, like, seems like there are like a couple of girls that are right there. There's like a pack of maybe four or five of them that are really like steadily moving themselves up. I think still it's like Tawny and Rachel in a league of their own. Then you have like Tracy, who's kind of a little bit in like no man's land sometimes. But then sometimes she'll either go up or like, you know, the girls behind will get closer, but it should be exciting. It's much more competitive, I think, than it has been last couple of years.
Yeah, definitely. Good stuff. And we'll move on to the men's racing. So quite an afternoon. The weather was changing quite a lot, certainly down in the bottom in the race village, like on and off rain. The wind was kind of changing. We had a little bit of sunshine, which everyone got a bit freaked out by because we haven't seen that thing for a few days. But Nico, take us through your run today. How did you find it?
Yeah, I was lucky enough. It wasn't raining when I rode, but it was pretty windy. Felt like I did a pretty good run. It wasn't a run that I, like, sometimes you get to the bottom and you're like, man, that was the best I could hit every section. But it was a run that I could probably go up and repeat a few times. It was a consistent, good run to build from, and I ended up finishing 22nd. So that's a solid result, and I'm definitely happy with the effort this weekend. I feel like the way that I rode, I deserved a 22nd place. So that's what you get.
What does that mean?
I don't want to sit here and be like bummed out on my 22nd place when it was the way, like, I rode fast enough to get 22nd. Like, if I didn't like that, I should have rode a little faster.
So that's actually an interesting one, because I think you hear a lot of riders like talking about, like, they'll come down to the bottom of the track and be like, somebody will ask them, like, is that going to hold up? And they'll be like, like, yes or no. Like, what are you calibrating that on?
I think off of feeling. Like, if you're like, oh, that time and my feel on the track, knowing my competitors, will they be able to challenge it, is what guys are kind of calibrating that on. Mm-hmm. So I think something that's really challenging at this venue that kind of goes a little bit under the radar is the wind playing such a factor.
Yeah.
Like, I would take pouring rain and no wind over wind any day. And it was pretty, like, if you watch, like, I think Connor is one of the first people that came on the live feed. Look at the tape on the sides of the track. Look at the start gate shot of him when he comes out, and the how windy it is compared to the guys at the end.
Yeah.
The wind here was almost always, like, as you're looking down the track, was blowing from left to right. And when you would come out of the left-hand turns, it was like a 30-mile-an-hour gust in your face is for sure going to slow you down.
Yeah.
And if you don't have that, like, you're gonna go faster.
Yeah.
And that's something that I think maybe skews the results a little bit.
Yeah.
Maybe it did today.
Yeah.
So it's just tough. Like, that's what you get when you have a racing sport in the mountains. You have variables. And this track, I think, just has it more than others because most of the time we race in the forest and there's not as much of an issue with wind. But this one definitely has that. So
yeah, because I think, too, a lot of people think about wind, like, just affecting your speed. But, like, here it's really, like, you, like, leaning into a corner feels totally different if, like you were saying, there's 30-mile-an-hour gust, or, like, going down a track and you need to be 2 inches left and you have like a gust coming from the right or whatever. Do you feel that kind of stuff a lot? Or
yeah, and like sometimes you want to jump some of the rocks and like pick up over stuff, but you have to be careful. If you get blown to the side when you hit that, it could just push you into something you don't want to hit and push you offline. And as well, like, I feel like the whole top section, like, where most of this race is normally won and lost, like, between the first split and the woods. It's, like, the longest, roughest section of the course. And if you can, it's not necessarily always lines in there. It's, like you said, carrying momentum. And if you can just go a little bit faster than the other guys, you can stay on top of the holes. Mm. And, like, you kind of skip over some of the deeper bumps. But if you're going slower, you, like, hit every single square edge. Like, a run that feels like you hit every square edge feels so bad. Yeah. And, like, it's just, like, time just ticking away.
Yeah.
And then other runs where you can just start with a little bit more momentum and stay on top of that stuff and skip over it, it's so much better. And when you get a gust of wind, it can put you into the slower rhythm, right, where you start to, like, feel like you hit everything.
Yeah.
So,
is it hard to regain that speed then? If you get to the point where you're suddenly, you're below that kind of critical speed that enables you to float over, is it hard to get back to a point where you can get back up above the holes?
Yeah, it's really tough because this track, if you look at the vertical drop versus distance, it's not a very steep average gradient. So you have to really work for the speed. And then in a lot of those sections, there's rocks. You can't take pedal strokes everywhere. So you're kind of having to, like, work for it by pumping or, like, skipping over rocks and, like, being precise with your tires. And it's really difficult to regain that speed once the wind hits you, because a lot of times if you're riding in the wind, it's every time you come out of a left turn and hit that straightaway. So you might hit five straightaways that you're got a headwind in your run, and that adds up to being slowing you down a little bit. Yeah. It's like you're riding through glue.
Yeah, and something that as a fan watching, we're never going to know. Like, you can look at the tape, but it's hard to say how much difference that made to people's runs.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it's hard to quantify for sure.
Yeah.
It's a good excuse though. You know? Yeah. You come down, you're like, wow, it was windy.
Yeah. Yeah, Troy was saying that, like, before, I don't know if it was, I think maybe practice this morning or at some point, I was like, yeah, like, what do you think of, like, the conditions, blah, blah, blah. And he's like, yeah, just the wind, like, I'm so light, like, blah, 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 blah. And then, and finals, I talked to him after, and he was like, I told you the wind, like, was so bad at the top. I didn't look at his splits, but, yeah, I think it's, like, it's interesting.
Do you think the impact of the wind varies much based on size of the rider? Like, because obviously Troy's got a smaller area for the wind to hit, but then he's lighter as a package. Do you have any feel for that?
I think somebody that knows more about, like, science could probably talk about this. But I mean, in the straightaways, like, that you had the wind at your back, I would try to stand taller because, okay, I feel like it would push you.
Yeah, yeah,
sail,
yeah.
Right? And then the straightaways where I was going in the wind, I would try to tuck.
It's like a bullet.
Yeah. So there's got to be, like, some aerodynamic effect, and then as well, like, the lighter rider's going to get blown around more than the heavier rider. So yeah. Mass and size, like, I don't know. I think it does.
Yeah. Cool. And a tough weekend all in, or a tough week for Aaron, I guess. So coming off his ankle injury, then the bike getting stolen, one of the bikes getting stolen, unfortunately, like, in the week, and then having to work through the weekend with that injury, only to then have a really horrible crash. Have you guys had the chance to see that?
Yeah, I saw it. I was kind of worried because when I was watching from the bottom after my run, and he didn't hit the first split, but normally they only put you on TV after you cross the first split. And I was like, oh, he must have just, like, not picked up, because sometimes that happens with riders where your transponder will miss. And then he came on screen and they showed, normally they pick the riders up a little bit below, but they showed him higher up, like him coming into a different section. And I was like, oh no, they're not showing this clip because... or any other reason than he had something, he had an issue. And then, so one of the, in the top section, there's a few of those bridges, and this was a small one, a bridge into a left turn. And it's kind of sketch, like, really, there, like, a few riders, Petey told me after the race that he did it one year the same way. I remember Mark Beaumont qualified first here one year, I think it was maybe 2012, and he crashed on that bridge.
No way.
And it's just that. A spot That's where crazy. You're like braking pretty hard into a left turn, and it's on a wooden bridge. And it looked like Aaron lost the front end, like, on the wood. The front wheel started to to push, and then it caught as soon as he got back onto the dirt and threw him right over the bars, like a MotoGP high side. It's pretty gnarly. But luckily he's okay. He's not any more injured, I guess, than he was
good
before. But yeah, he's been having a rough couple of days. He's taking it really well. Like, it's cool. I've been staying with him and hanging out all weekend, and he's super positive about everything. Like, it's out of his control. So he's like, you know, I just get to the track every day, get up every day, do my best, and stuff like that happens. If it's not something that I could have done differently, like, what can I do? So
good attitude.
He rolled his ankle at the National at Mountain Creek 2 weeks ago, and it was super swollen. And then, unfortunately, in practice on Friday here, he tweaked it again. He like stomped it on the ground and rolled it over another time, and he was pretty frustrated with that because it was like just manageable as it was, and then that made it a lot worse. But even after that, he still went up and qualified pretty well. Like, he finished like 20th in qualifying, and watching him limp around with his ankle, like, it was pretty darn good. And then earlier this week, when we got picked up in Edinburgh on Tuesday, and the night before, the mechanics stayed in a hotel near the airport that they even like researched one that was secure to keep. Right. They called ahead and was like, we have the trailer, can we stay in a secure? And somebody broke into the van and stole Aaron's race bike, which it wasn't a big deal for him. We have enough spare parts for a race team. Like, guys were asking, like, is he going to be able to ride? Like, yeah, he's going to be able to ride. We got multiple bikes. So they were able to build him up a new bike. But just that, and then on top of it, to like go through all the tough week, and he made it not even 30 seconds into the run and had a huge crash.
Yeah.
It's just kind of like...
Yeah.
Like, it's like, what next, you know? Like, what else you got to throw at me?
Yeah.
It's kind of a tough one for him.
Yeah. It's an impressive, like, character, though, to be able to work through all that and deal with it and kind of shrug it off and keep going. So
Yeah,
I've been on a lot of teams with Aaron, and he's impressively collected in those situations. Yeah. Like, I remember a few years ago when he was coming back challenging for the lead in the overall, and Lenzerheide, he blew his tire off after he was first at all the splits and ended up finishing the race last place. And he would have probably taken the overall that day, but instead he went down 200 points with only two races to go. And after that, he, like, the amount of time he had for fans at the finish line, like, still signing autographs and shaking hands and hanging out, whereas, like, I feel like a lot of riders, I've felt really bad after a race that I thought I was going to do well at and had an issue or something. And like, I just want to get out of there. And I don't want to see anybody. Yeah. Like, it's like, it's very emotional, high stress situation. And Aaron's just like, well, I did my best, and what else can I do? So it's pretty cool. It's inspiring for me as his teammate to be around him, like, see a guy that handles himself that way. It's really cool.
Yeah, that is, it is crazy. Like, even, like, sometimes too, you'd be like up on the track in practice and like he'll have like a huge crash, like huge, like, because he doesn't crash like a whole lot, but like he does crash in practice like every now and then, and you'd be like, oh, like Aaron, I wonder if he's like okay or like how he's gonna do, and then like just qualify first. If that would have happened to me, I would have been like, good grief, like, should I be racing? Like, I don't know, you know? But yeah, like, just so resilient.
Made of strong stuff. Yeah. And a tough weekend, unfortunately, for Reese Wilson, a kind of local hero. And had a great result here last year with his first podium and then qualified fourth, which was awesome to see. And then looked like a snap chain out of the gate, which was, a shame to see him rolling down, but still massive support from the Fort William crowd, which was... was cool to kind of cheer him home, but fingers crossed he'll be back on it in Leargang.
Yeah,
ready to go again.
Yeah, those dudes are really on the move. The Trek team is really impressive. Like, Charlie and Reese, like, kind of, I feel like, was overshadowed by Charlie's result last time, but like Reese got like 12th or something like that, and then to come here and qualify fourth, it's like you're. I think to go from 1 year, it's one thing to get like one result, and it's another thing even too to get a couple of good results in 1 year, but translating that from 1 year to the next is, I think, when you know someone's really, like, gonna be around for a while. Yeah. Because there's just so much opportunity to mess it up in the off season. Like, you have so long, like, you could not train, you could overtrain, you could overthink, like, just so much could go bad. So when somebody comes out the next year and it's just like right on it again, it's really impressive.
Yeah.
And I like those guys too, because they didn't just go out and start their factory team and buy the best rider that was out there. Like, they took guys that were up and coming and gave them a good platform and have had awesome results at both races this year. Like, both of their elite riders have, like, Reese qualified top five and Charlie finished on the podium at the first race. So, like, both their guys are doing great, and they're by no means, like, the most expensive guys. Like, go and buy the best dude right now. They, like, find guys that they know have the potential and put them on their team and see what they can do. And they've been really doing a great job for them this year.
Yeah, it is, like, impressive to see that. Because I think, too, that's, like, the other thing. When you're making a team, it's really, really, really easy to mess it up, because you would think, I think from the outside in, a lot of people just think of a team as being a resource, and it is, but the resources are not necessarily just the money and the bikes and the travel or whatever. Like, that's kind of a given. It's kind of the same as, the things that really matter is, like, the culture of the team, you know, like, how do you feel when you're going there? Like, are they trying to make Charlie and Reese do the same thing when they're, like, completely different people? Like, how much can you, how much leeway do you have? Like, what kind of management style do people have on the team? So it's been cool to see that Trek has, like, gotten that right, because, like, spending some time over there is it's, like, a fun place to be.
Yeah, the atmosphere in the team's great, isn't it? Those three have gelled, like, well, four of them actually seem to have gelled and get on, and, like, they've known each other forever, and it's cool. And that's reflected in a good result for Cade as well this weekend. So his first ever elite race, 20th place.
Yeah, and he, like, was another one of those dudes who had, like, some trouble in practice or qualifying. Like,
yeah, he ended up in the same hole as Tani.
Yeah. And he was, like, talked to him before the race, and he was, like, all wrapped up. And
yeah, he's got quite a swollen hand from that crash.
Yeah, totally. Yeah. For sure.
Yeah, so he's got a bright future. Like, he seems to be able to turn his hand to racing and to the, like, you know, jibbing and freestyle. Yeah, and
I know it is. It's, like, I think it's rare for someone to have, like, both of those, like, sides of the coin, because it's totally different mindset, you know. But he's, when you watch him, he's super intense. Like, when you see him come off the track, like, he'll be frustrated or whatever. Like, he's super mellow when it's whip off and whatever else, but when it's race time, it's like, it's go time. So
good stuff. Good to see Greg Minnaar back. Took a what he called a relatively safe run to ninth place quali, which was pretty impressive, and then it looked at one point like he was in his usual owning the hill mode, right?
Yeah. I thought he was going to be on the podium. It was just till the last couple of guys there.
Yeah.
He finished sixth just off the podium. But, oh, that's awesome. Greg, he's getting old. And for him to keep putting these results up is just amazing. Like, he is the GOAT. He's awesome. So, good. Good on him.
I for sure called him for the win, because he was so nervous. I had never seen him that nervous before. It's like so funny talking to them, because like Marshy was like, yeah, we put a bunch of extra sealant in the tires, and like he came down and he was like, man, I was just like, you know, once I came out of the woods, I was like, okay, like now I can try to make up a little bit of time. But before that, like, I was just like, don't mess up. His like tires were pumped up to like, I couldn't even push him down. I like tried to push the tires.
This was for his quali run.
Yeah. This is like, but I feel like that's also like Greg, like, and Marshy just like tweaking. It's funny, but it is. It's like from the outside, you see him just so cool always, but it's, he like works for it, you know, like even during the weekend, where like he'll like solve some problems, puzzle a little bit, and then like just get it together at the last minute.
He makes it happen. Yeah. That's for sure.
Yeah. He knows how to execute, doesn't he? Uh-huh. That's for sure. And Matt Walker just after him in seventh place, kind of backing up of his fifth at Maribor. He had a pretty big crash here at the British National 2 weeks ago, and it's been kind of laid up, really, I think, and in quite a bit of pain through the weekend. So definitely a bright spot there.
Yeah.
Yeah, that guy's really impressive. Both races this year, he's put together really solid runs. He looks good on the bike. He looks fast. I remember last year, like, somebody saying, like, who do you think is, like, the most underrated rider that's going to do well? And I thought he would be that guy. And he's turned out to do awesome this year. And it's cool with, like, Saracen, too, because they, the same way, like, they kind of brought him up. Like, I don't, not to say anything bad about him, but I feel like they just took a junior, British junior rider and brought them in the program and gave them the tools they needed. And now Matt Walker is out there getting podiums and looking like one of the fastest guys in the world.
Yeah.
So it's awesome. He just looks solid too. Like, he's never out of control. He's like, he's just good.
Yeah. Like a style that you could, like, add more speed to. I think sometimes you, like, see some people, you're like, well, that's the limit. Like, you know, like, they'll, even if they do, like, get a really great result, it's like, that was the run of their life, you know? But somebody like Matt, it's just like, yeah, it was an insane run. But that was, like, the other interesting thing here was, everyone that came down was really stoked. You know what I mean? Like, they came down and be like, oh God, like, that was a sick run. And then somebody would beat them and they would be stoked. And then somebody would beat them. And then, like, somebody beat them by, like, 3 seconds.
Yeah. So let's talk about that top five then. Cause yeah, like I said, Minar was looking like he was on for it and he wouldn't, you know, you wouldn't put it past him. He's done it here enough times. And, yeah, Finn had a pretty storming run that kind of at the time felt like that'll do it, right?
Mm-hmm.
But it just kept coming. Mm-hmm. Like, where are these guys finding that kind of time? We're getting pretty used to tight racing, and that those gaps are huge.
Yeah.
I think this course being a lot longer than the other ones, it kind of, the percentage might be a little, it might not be as big as the time gap. But no, equally as impressed as you guys about Amari, man. He was so fast, and he was fast everywhere. Like, split one, he put a decent chunk into the competition, which is, there's like nothing up there. Yeah. Like that first split, like you come out of the gate and it's just smooth and a couple of turns. Like, it's the fastest guys in the world are all doing that the same. And he was a little bit up on whoever was in the hot seat just in that section.
Yeah.
And then, the whole way down, he just kind of built, including the sprint. Like, there was a lot of guys, like, I think it was a little bit deceiving with, like, maybe Finn or some of the other guys who were up in the technical stuff by a lot, and then they ended up crossing the line only a second back.
Yeah.
But Amari, like, held and then built on it. Mm-hmm. Like, he was fastest everywhere. Even, like, the whole bottom, maybe minute and a half on this track is pretty physical. Like, if you have power, you can gain time. And a lot of times you see different guys making up time at the bottom and coming back, or guys on a flyer and then losing time because they don't have the power. But he did both. Like, he pinned it everywhere at the top through all the technical, the rough stuff, and then laid down the horsepower down the through the jumps and everything. So that was amazing. He did an awesome run.
Yeah, he did. Yeah. Yeah, and that, I think too, what Nico was saying about the top split here, they actually moved the split marker back, because sometime, I guess it's kind of been in different spots over the years, but a lot of the time it's either right after that left turn where everyone was kind of crashing in that hole. And this year it was back to, like, right when you come off the boardwalk. So it literally was, you know, no rocks or anything like that before.
Yeah, so nothing particularly challenging up to that point.
Yeah, but it is, like, I think that does kind of set the tone, because that is a little bit easier version of, like, what's to come.
Okay.
So if, like, you can execute those turns at the top, like, on the brakes and then, like, off the brakes, and you're on the edge, like, of traction. Like, you never feel like that as much as you do here, where you're just like, if I, like, move a muscle wrong, like, I'm going to slide out because, like, I am, like, just right there. So
on the ragged edge. But Amory's run, it looked until the very last drop pretty in control this time. It didn't look that right to me anyway.
I thought one of the things I thought was interesting is like, man, the speed difference between like those top maybe 7-8 guys was so noticeable, because especially like the last couple, like because in the turns and they would slide, like you see both their wheels sliding like everywhere and they're just like comfortable with it. Like one of the spots I keep remembering is right where G crashed, I think it was last year, after there's like a little, the pinball section or whatever.
Yeah, yeah.
You make this left turn and I think it was Amari and maybe Finn or something like that, but they would come through it and it's a little bit awkward because right in the middle of the turn, it kind of goes, it rises, you know, like it kind of loses its, instead of it like being concave all the way through, it's like convex. And so it really offsets you. But those dudes would just commit to it. And so because it kind of rose up, you lose a lot of traction and they would just be totally fine, like two-wheel drifting, like around it, like, and not only, and be ready for it. Like, this is what I'm supposed to be doing, right? And like you come down like the next section and like you'd bounce into something and they would just bounce like over some more holes, rather than like you're precise, but it's, you're carrying so much speed that you're just kind of doing different things than a lot of other people, which is just crazy.
Yeah, and almost interpreting the track in a different way, like using the physics of it differently.
Yeah, like Nico was saying, where you're, there's lines like horizontally, but there's also lines like vertically, like where am I going to put my tires down? And so I think a lot of the times people think like, oh, like where are the fast guys going or whatever? And everyone could be going on the same line horizontally, but vertically, like it's like, where am I putting my tires down at? Or like, where am I pushing into the ground?
Yeah.
And I think that's where you see a lot of the difference a lot of time, is like those dudes will be like skipping a hole or just like unweighting over something that everyone else is kind of rolling and like hitting.
Cool. And it's, been a great day. Like, it builds the excitement for the season. And winner on the day, Amory Pierron, but Troy Brosnan takes the overall. So that's a pretty good position for him to be in. And he's dangerous, right? He tends to be there or thereabouts.
For sure. Yeah, he's solid. He's always on the podium. And I think the next couple races too, or but also the guys around him, like it's going to be a good fight and it's going to be really exciting to see.
Yeah, good stuff. Yeah. Well, that's a good summary of the Fort William stuff. And then you guys have got some turnaround to do and off to Lee again. How does that work for you? Do most of the athletes fly? Do you travel with the trucks? Like, how does it work?
Yeah, so that's something that I always thought would be interesting to talk more about, because I always wonder what the motocross guys do. Like, what do you stay in a hotel? How do you get to the race? So yeah, for our team and most teams on the World Cup circuit, we all travel together as a team. And so we're going to go to Leo Gang tomorrow. So it's currently Sunday night at Fort William, and we're going to leave tomorrow morning early and we're going to fly from Edinburgh to Munich, and then we'll drive to Leo Gang, rent a car and drive there. And our team mechanics will drive our trucks and pit to Leo Gang. So okay. We'll meet them there. It'll take them about 2 days. They'll leave tomorrow morning and get there on Tuesday night, and we'll be there Monday night. But Leo Gang, the hotels and stuff and the venue, it's kind of a nicer place to spend your free day. So we've got a day off either tomorrow or Tuesday, and we'll travel tomorrow and hang out a day in Leo Gang. It's pretty nice over there. So and then we stay in a hotel with all the other team members. Normally the riders stay together because they're on the same schedule. The mechanics stay together because they're on the same schedule. That way we're both, going to bed and waking up at the same times. The mechanics a lot of times have to get out pretty early. So,
yeah,
we just share rooms with the other riders and stay together. And I think that's the way that most teams do it. Either rent hotel rooms or a condo or house. Like, we're in little cabins here now. And next week we're in a hotel that has pretty nice rooms to usually share with one other person. And then, a lot of teams cook. Like, our team is pretty nice. We have Todd Shumlick's wife, Kathy, he's our team manager, and she cooks for us at all the races, which is awesome, just to have like home cooked meals rather than eating at a restaurant all the time. But a lot of teams also go to a hotel that has a meal plan, so they can get cooked meals there too. So it's different on different teams. But
nice.
Yeah, everybody will be in Leogang either sometime tomorrow or Tuesday.
Yeah. And what does the week look like? Do you obviously have a bit of a rest day, but do you get back on the bike? Do you get in the gym?
Yeah. So, I mean, I don't want to do any, I'm not going to do any training that my body's going to see a benefit from before next. I always think of it like that. Like if I'm going to go do this workout or exercise, whatever it is it going to help me by Sunday when my race is? Like, I'm not going to go to the gym and smash myself and get stronger in time to use that in the race.
Yeah, of course.
So,
yeah.
But at the same time, like, I'm going to be training when I get back home, so I don't want to take too much time off. So I might do some like maintenance stuff, like go a lot of times on a race week, I'll go to the gym and just like cut my weights in half or something so that I keep moving, stay loose, or go for a spin. That's always great. I've ridden the bike park in Leogang sometimes because it's pretty fun. It's a cool place to ride. So if we get there on Monday and we don't have to ride until Friday, maybe one of the days I go up and do a little bit of riding. Some of the guys, if they weren't comfortable on their bike this week, it's a good chance to try something, because once you're in World Cup practice, there's just not any time to be tuning your bike. So, it's a good chance, like in Leogang, to ride the bike park and maybe try something different. But, most of the guys just try to relax, stay loose, at least take a good day off. One day is pretty full with travel, and then a good day off, and then either spin, go to the gym, something. No hard training, just to stay. There's so much time. Like, compared to other sports, the World Cup, like, we're going to get there on Monday night, and we don't race until Sunday afternoon. So, like, there's a lot of time to think about it. And you want to do stuff to occupy your time and not just sit there and think about this race coming up. luckily, we're in a cool part of the world. We get to travel the world, so maybe go see some cool stuff. The Red Bull headquarters is near Leogang, and they have I think it's Hangar 18 or something.
Yeah.
Where they have, like, some of the planes and stuff, the old Red Bull stuff, the Formula One cars on display. So we've gone there to their museum, the Red Bull Museum, in the past, and that's something fun to do. But just a balance between, like, wanting to do some fun things and make the most of your trip overseas, but at the same time not do too much so you're tired for your race. And yeah, just managing your time. But a lot of times it's always beneficial when we've done fun things at the races, go swim in a waterfall or do something like that, because it just makes you feel good. You're enjoying the time more and ride better.
Yeah, making the most of it. Good stuff.
Yeah, I feel like that's so true. Like, it's so easy to get sucked into being like, oh, I'm in a race and like I need to do whatever, but it's like, you would never sit at home just like thinking about a race. You know what I mean? Like, so like, why would you come to a race and just like sit in your hotel room and mull it over for days?
Cool. Good stuff. Well, it's been really nice to sit in the same room and do this.
Yeah.
Hopefully we can do it again at some point before Fort William next year. It'd be cool. But
yeah,
if it's then, that's all good. So yeah, I hope you have safe travels, have some slightly better weather in Leogang.
Yep.
And look forward to seeing how it all goes next weekend.
Yeah, thanks a lot. Yeah. Really glad we could all do it together. Some people listening probably don't realize how hard it is when you're just on the phone to like know who's gonna talk next and not want to talk over somebody. Totally. But yeah, just keep growing the podcast and then we can do it every weekend. Sweet. Like this.
Yeah, I know. We're both there, Chris. Where are you?
No, it's just me.
You're holding us back.
I'm letting the side down. I'll sort it out. Nice one. Cool. All right, cheers, guys. Have a good week. And we'll speak again soon.
Thank you.
Cheers, mate.
All right, that's it for our Fort William post-race show and our first time recording this together. Who knows? Maybe we can find a way to do this together more often. I certainly hope so. Thanks to PNW Components for supporting the episode. Don't forget, they've got great listener discount offer for you, so go and check them out. All you need to do is head to pnwcomponents.com and use the code DOWNTIME at the checkout for 10% off. Please give us a follow on social media where we're at Downtime Podcast. Subscribe to the show so you get all of our episodes delivered straight to your device. And if you want to get yourself some exclusive Downtime Podcast goodies and help support what we're doing, then head to downtimepodcast.com/shop. Please keep on telling your friends about the podcast and spreading the word. It really does make a huge difference. Right, we've got another awesome episode coming up tomorrow, in fact. But until then, get out and ride.